Hello, it's Randy Rhodes. Here's a clip from our show, and go to randyrhodes.com for the whole thing and a podcast. Buy a stinking podcast.
Mary had a little man.
The fault.
We believe that all men are created equal.
To the magnificent mosaic that is America.
From radio beacon to radio beacon.
I have a dream.
Change has come to America.
Bring them on.
Knock, knock. Who's there?
It's a figment of your imagination.
Randy Rhodes Show.
Turn up your mind.
Okay, here's 2 minutes of your life you'll never get back.
That's what the left wants. That's what they want. Because in the large urban areas and blue states like New York and California, minorities are substantial. Look at the landscape. Philadelphia, Dallas, Fort Worth, Miami. In all of these places, the minority vote usually goes heavily to the Democrats. Head to that New York City, LA, and Chicago, San Francisco. Don't really have a national election anymore, do you? You have targeted populations. Newspapers like the New York Times and the LA Times have editorialized to get rid of the Electoral College. They well know that neutralizing the largely white rural areas in the Midwest and South will assure liberal politicians get power and keep it. Talking Points believes this is all about race. The left sees white privilege in America as an oppressive force that must be done away with. Therefore, white working class voters must be marginalized. And what better way to do that than center the voting power in the cities? Very few commentators will tell you that the heart of liberalism in America today is based on race. It permeates almost every issue. That white men have set up a system of oppression. That system must be destroyed. Bernie Sanders peddled that. To some extent, Hillary Clinton did. And the liberal media tries to sell that all day long. So-called white privilege, bad. Diversity, good. If you look at the voting patterns, it's clear that the Democrats are heavily reliant on the minority vote, also on the woman vote. White men have largely abandoned the Democrats. And the left believes this is because of racism, that they want to punish minorities, keep them down. So that's what's really going on when you hear about the Electoral College and how unfair it allegedly is. Summing up, left wants power taken away from the white establishment. They want a profound change in the way America is run. Taking voting power away from the white precincts is the quickest way to do that.
Holy shit. Oh, my God. Okay, now, didn't Fox News say that Obama and liberals play the race card? What the F was that? What is that right there? First of all, I got to say, you know, the Electoral College, not everybody wants to do away with it. I do. Because why in the world wouldn't we want to equalize votes? Why wouldn't we want to say one man, one vote? Why? Why wouldn't we want that? See, what happens here is, you know, you live in Wyoming over there, and I live in Florida over here, and we both get the same number of senators? How is that? How is that? How is that? It takes your breath away. I mean, here he is saying the white establishment must be protected. White privilege is in the balance, people. You better wake up. White privilege. White privilege is going to go away. I'm playing the race card? Really? Why? Why would I be? It's so amazing. Now, of course, he doesn't talk about how they suppress minority voting and how they've got this down to a science with, you know, souls to the polls on Sunday. No voting on Sunday. Or early voting. No, we're not going to let you early vote. Or gerrymandering districts so that they don't look anything, you know, like a nice normal neighborhoods where, you know, people who, you know, would want representation for their particular neighborhood's needs could get representation for their particular neighborhood's needs. No, instead, they cut out, you know, a part of this neighborhood and add it to another neighborhood that has different wants, hopes, desires, and dreams, apparently, and dilute the vote of the people who want something else. You know, I mean, listen, these people are experts at voter suppression, absolute experts at it. And he has the nerve to sit there and play the race card right there on the faux news. You know, I mean, of all the, like I said, you know, the viewership of the network news, the nightly network news, the CBS, the NBC, the ABC nightly news, that's in the tens of millions of people. Okay, you get 8 to 10, 15 million people watching. These little cable shows, you know, like if he gets, you know, a million people, he's happy. If he gets 3 million people, he's dancing on the freaking table and his agent goes in and asks for a bonus, you know. So it's not, you know, but this thing is having an effect, man. This is just an amazing freaking channel that has made people, you know, ultimately believe stuff that's absolutely untrue. You do understand why the framers created the Electoral College, don't you? You understand why our Constitution says black people are 3/5 of a person, right? Right? You didn't have very many white people living in the South. You just had a few owners of other human beings that weren't white people living in the South. And so they said, oh, well, let's count our slaves as people, but only 3/5. So this way we can tilt the vote and maintain slavery. The whole idea of the Electoral College, the whole idea that everybody gets the same number of senators is bizarre to me. How is that possible? And he's saying, you know, hey, you know, rural America. He's obviously talking to the forgotten man. So who is this freaking forgotten man? Who is this person? Because I started looking it up. I started looking at who the forgotten man. You know that they've been writing essays about the freaking forgotten man since 1965? Do you understand that? Now, FDR was talking about the forgotten man back in the 30s, but he was talking about the people who got wrecked in the Great Depression by the Wall Street people. He was talking about the shenanigans that went on by the very, very rich elite and that we needed to build this country from the bottom up, not the top down. That was FDR's forgotten man. He did radio shows on the forgotten man, 1932, 1933. You know, I mean, that's who the original forgotten man was. It was everybody that got slashed in the Great Depression. Didn't have much to do with African Americans, though, I will say. The African Americans didn't come into the picture of being forgotten until, believe it or not, the Texas president, LBJ. The War on Poverty and the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. That's when we started to remember that there were other forgotten men that didn't look like the white establishment forgotten man. You know, the ones with the privilege. Because no matter how bad it got for them, at least they were white. they could move about the country freely. They could relocate, blah, blah, blah. But it's so unbelievable. I couldn't believe this. I cannot believe that this is, and this is the kind of stuff that we really have to resist. I mean, honest to God, it's got to be resisted. It's got to be pointed out. It's got to be, made to look as stupid as it is. It has to be shown to be racism. It has to be shown to be, pitting one American against the other. Because that is clearly what it is. You know, you have people in Flint, Michigan. You don't hear very much about them. Where is the news coverage about Flint, Michigan? Where is the news coverage about how Ricky Snyder, the Republican governor of Michigan, decided that he would appoint emergency managers to cut costs in places like Flint? You do realize that the district attorney in Flint, Michigan, is charging people like crazy. Like yesterday, three more people, they're facing like 46 years in prison for poisoning an entire, that doesn't make it out there as terrorism, you know, by white elites, does it? No, we don't call that terrorism at all. And yet you've decimated the futures of young kids who through no fault of their own are drinking the water that Ricky Snyder told them was safe. You know, this is terrorism. That is environmental terrorism. There is no question about it. They made a choice. It was all for money. And these kids are going to suffer for the rest of their lives. You had honor students all of a sudden. They can't hold a thought in their head. They can't add two and two because of the lead and all the crap that's in their bodies now. I don't see the media covering that. I don't see anybody, I don't see the Bill O'Reilly being concerned about the common man, the forgotten man, the poor people that worked their asses off in Flint, Michigan all these years only to be removed from the whole Democratic experiment. You know, emergency managers, you don't vote for them. You don't get to choose them. You can't impeach them. Ricky Snyder appoints them. Period, end of story. They are now in charge of your entire freaking city. And if they poison you, well, a few years later down the road, maybe you'll get an active district attorney who gives a rat's ass about law and order and brings them to the bar of justice. But that, you know, and if you read, you know, Detroit newspapers, which I doubt you do, then you would know that this is ongoing and more arrests were made yesterday. So what? Where is the news? Where is the freaking news about that? What? He's going to tell me that the Electoral College needs to stay in place to protect the white elite in this country, or to protect the poor downtrodden white man? What the hell is wrong with people? What is wrong with you? Donald Trump's very busy tweeting today. I was right about terrorism. You see, this whole thing in Germany, this whole thing proves I was right. I was right. What are you right about? What were you right about? That there's a death cult out there that you know, we took land away from and now they're peeling off and they're going to do some lone wolf crap by hijacking a truck and running over people? Oh, you were right about that? Really? You were right about that. You know, it's so interesting because when I look at the number of white supremacists who have committed acts of terror in this country post 9/11, I mean, I could do pre 9/11 and go back to 1995 and bring you up, you know, your favorite, Timothy McVeigh, who killed 168 people when he blew up the Murrah building. I could, you know, bring him up. But let's just stay post 2001. Let's just stay post 9/11, shall we? You know how many lethal attacks in this country were committed by Islamic militants? Do you know how many? 7. Do you know how many people espousing racial hatred and hostility to the government and theories like the sovereign citizen movement, which denies the legitimacy of most of our statutory laws, have occurred? 2x as many. And why? Where is the media on Dylann Roof? You know, it's so interesting. It's Christmas and, you know, okay, the war on Christmas has been won by Donald Trump single-handedly, a thrice divorced guy with 5 children from 3 baby mamas. He won the war on Christmas. Woohoo! I mean, Dylann freaking Roof took the jury 2 hours to bring him in guilty. 2 hours on every single count. Every single count. Where in the hell is that conversation? And this guy left a freaking manifesto. A racist, hate-filled manifesto. And Bill O'Reilly will have none of it. And, you know, Bill O'Reilly, honestly, he's one of these guys that actually supports this kind of personal lone wolf terrorism, because he sat there for years, Tiller the baby killer, Tiller the baby killer, Tiller the baby killer. And then somebody killed Dr. Tiller. And he said, I don't know nothing about that. This is such propaganda. And, you know, it's supposed to be illegal within the United States to propagandize your own people. And yet nobody holds anybody accountable for any of this swill. And it's causing so much damage. I can't even stand it. The amount of racial hostility, the amount of hatred in this country is just, it's off the hook. I mean, you know, when we had our first, you know, when Barack Obama won this first election, the very first thing that the lily white Republican senators did, including Paul Ryan from the House and some others, John Kyle, Jim DeMint, McConnell, we're going to have to go full McConnell. You understand that, Democrats? When I talk resistance, I mean resistance. They were having a meeting even before Obama had even, you know, walked into his own new home and unpacked his underwears about what to do about the black president, what to do about him. And Frontline ran a whole special about it. I'm just going to play you a little brief clip. Or not. Oh, no. Don't tell me we're going to have this all day today. Let me see something. I want to try this. Okay. Da-da-da-da. One moment. Okay, here. I'll fast.
Now he gets another chance to be the guy who united the country.
In the week before his inauguration, a look back inside Obama's presidency.
Good evening, everyone. As we watch the making of the president 2008, there are 10 key
states. Senator's scheduled tonight. He is now at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. He will watch the election returns. And
Ohio is gone for Obama.
Now 11 o'clock on the East Coast. And Keith, we can report history.
Barack Obama is projected to be the next president.
Senator Barack Obama of Illinois will be the next.
November 4th, 2008. On this night in Chicago, inside Barack Obama's private world, the news began to sink in.
I kept watching Obama as he transformed from this young man to the next president of the United States. This was a different man.
President of the United States.
Tens of thousands, so maybe hundreds of thousands, who have gathered in Grant Park in Chicago.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next first family of the United States.
Only 4 years earlier, he'd been a state legislator.
The look on his face, to me, looked like someone who finally understood the weight of the job that he had just won.
Almost as if the weight of the world had rested on his shoulders.
The road ahead will be long. Our climb will be steep. Two wars, a planet in peril, the worst financial crisis in a century. But America, I have never been more hopeful than I am tonight that we will get there. I promise you, we as a people will get there. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
If he had any idea that night how difficult this would be, the next day would prove it.
So much for that election day euphoria.
The economy has now lost 650,000 jobs just in the past 3 months.
And all eyes are now on Barack Obama to turn it around.
The cascade of bad news began with the economy.
When fear swept through the markets and the losses.
He had to start thinking about this the day after he was elected.
This was the most eventful and consequential presidential transition in American history.
We were all worried about what we were seeing. We knew that the credit system was pretty quickly headed towards something that looked a lot like seizure.
The president-elect was told that in the 2 months since Lehman Brothers crashed, the panic on Wall Street had only gotten worse.
What we were facing was something that really had never contemplated, never experienced.
Unemployment was nearly 7% and climbing. The stock market was down more than 6,000 points.
There was a growing sense of calamity. This could be the most climactic economic crisis in all of American history, that we were that close to a complete meltdown.
Obama, at that moment, gets a real glimpse of the future. Disaster's coming.
At the end of the conversation, there's basically no bright spots. And I say to the then president-elect, wow, that had to have been the worst economic briefing a new president's had in almost a century. And the president says, that's not even my worst briefing this week.
There were the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the pursuit of Al-Qaeda, and above all, a huge political challenge.
Finally bring the change we need to Washington.
We are ready to take this country in a fundamentally...
During the campaign, he had promised Americans he would fix the partisanship that plagued and divided Washington.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Virginia, let's go change the world. Thank you.
But
it's the inauguration day of the nation's first African-American president.
This is the biggest inaugural of all time in a country that likes the word
big. The first couple to arrive at the neighborhood ball.
On the very night Barack Obama was inaugurated, a group of Republicans quietly gathered to develop plans for taking on the new president.
A meeting, a dinner, took place in the famous steakhouse in downtown Washington, with Newt Gingrich as sort of the MC, as it were.
The thing I found disturbing this week was the
at the gathering of GOP luminaries, top conservative Congressman Eric Cantor.
Where'd he go?
Kevin McCarthy.
I do not think Republicans ought to be the loyal opposition.
Paul Ryan.
Republicans ought to be better alternative parties.
Senate power brokers Jim DeMint.
I think the biggest fight will be over
John
taxes.
Kyle.
The biggest fight there will be over the energy
Tom
tax.
Coburn. An event organizer, Frank Luntz.
Frank Luntz.
The room was filled. It was a who's who of ranking members who had at one point been committee chairman or in the majority, who now wondered out loud whether they were in the permanent minority.
Many of them had attended Obama's inauguration. They had seen that breathtaking spectacle of 1.5 million people on the Mall, and it felt like a wholesale repudiation of the Republican Party.
They walked into that dining room as depressed as I've seen any elected members of Congress. They lost every Senate seat they could lose. They lost all these House seats. The numbers were so great that they thought that they weren't coming back again, not for an election or two, but maybe a generation or two.
As the night wore on, the talk turned to the future.
3 hours, some of the brightest minds in the Republican Party debated how to be relevant.
The point I made was that we had to be prepared in the tradition of Wooden at UCLA to run a full-court press, and we had to see how Obama behaved and to offer an alternative to what he wanted to do.
So they decided that they needed to begin to fight Obama on everything. This meant unyielding opposition to every one of the Obama administration's legislative initiatives.
He could be defeated partly by his own ideology and by his own behaviors.
The feeling was that if that group could cooperate and if that group could lead, that the wilderness might not be a generation away.
By the end of the evening, you began to reorient and realize, wait a second, you got Nancy Pelosi as an opponent. You got, you know, you have a clear choice of ideologies. We have a tremendous amount of hard work to do, but it's doable.
They all talked about this, and they began to get more and more optimistic, and they left feeling practically exuberant.
Inauguration day full of events.
Yeah, because they had decided that they were going to say no to everything, everything and anything he did. This is why we have a Supreme Court opening for, what, 5 months now? 5 months? A president currently, we have one president at a time, and currently the president is Barack Obama. All right. We have a president now who won the popular vote the last time and the Electoral College, obviously, but the popular vote by 5 million votes. And he will not be allowed to select a replacement for Antonin Scalia on the Supreme Court. Instead, a man who lost the popular vote by 3 million votes, which is the exact same number of times you could tell a Trump supporter that he won, that he lost the popular vote by. You could tell them 3 million times, they still won't believe you. But instead, we're going to have a president who lost by 3 million votes choosing the next Supreme Court justice. And Bill O'Reilly has the balls to sit there and say white elitism is being decimated somehow? White privilege is somehow being eroded? Wyoming has 2 senators. California has 2 senators. That's wrong.
For a commercial-free, on-demand, whenever, wherever listening experience, visit randyrhodes.com for your personal premium podcast today.
Go to randyrhodes.com for the whole thing and a podcast. Buy a stinking podcast.